This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, with 2010 London Symposium. Proposition: I know my ideal diet. I know my ideal diet. Now, what is our ideal diet? What is our ideal diet? Can you have any idea in the world of what our ideal diet is? Do you have any idea at all what our ideal diet is? I'm asking you rhetorically. And you know what it means when I ask you rhetorically? I don't want you to answer it. I'm just giving you a rhetoric question here that I'm going to answer myself. Do we have any idea what our ideal diet is? We don't. We don't. Because we have so many things to consider. We have so many things to consider what our ideal diet is. Now, let's just say you are an Eskimo. You know what an Eskimo is? They live up in the North Pole area and South Pole perhaps, but they live in the North. And do they have a lot of vegetables? No. Do they have a lot of plants and food like that? No. Do they eat a lot of blubber? You know what blubber is? That's from the whale fat. Fat of a whale. Blubber. They eat a lot of blubber. And Eskimos usually have a little layer of blubber on them themselves as insulation from the cold. Well now, they eat a lot of blubber. And blubber is not good for you, according to what the scientists tell us. What the dietitians tell us. It's not good for your body. Your body doesn't function at its primo activity. Now, the Eskimos, they eat a lot of seafood. They eat whatever fish they can catch. They eat whatever whales they can catch, seals they can catch, and they make their meals out of it. And how they prepare their meat probably is hanging it up to dry, but they cannot hang it outdoors. Because if they hang it outdoors, some bear is going to come along and say, oh, goody, goody. Somebody's been doing the hunting for me, you know? So they have to hang it inside of their igloo or inside of their tent that's made out of skins or made out of ice blocks, whatever. And you think to yourself, who wants to live in an ice house made out of ice blocks? But they handle that quite well because they have their heater in there. They have their heating device, whatever it is, fire. And they have to have a hole to let smoke get out. Otherwise, they'd be smoked. Smoked Eskimos. And but they eat this blubber. And they eat this fish. And they eat whales. And in these meat of these animals are all sorts of things. They eat plankton. What does the whale eat? A whale eats plankton by the tons. He brings it in through his filters through his mouth, and he filters out plankton. Now that is a living sea organism, and it is what is their food, their basic food. And they take it by the ton every day. They eat so much of it, they have to really have a lot of it. And so that's why whales travel around the world. And they do their mating at certain times, they do their breeding at certain times, and their young need to have food, and they need to have it in great volumes, and so they go to the places where it's freely there, and then they end up back up in the north area for their normal living habitat. Now, some whales live further south, but we're talking right now about the diet of the Eskimo. And the Eskimo's diet is certainly limited, and yet they are free from virtually every disease. Now, that's a compliment, isn't it? They're free from virtually every disease because they do not have those bacteria that make those diseases in their bodies or in the bodies of the whales or the other creatures. Now, this has been true for centuries, although it's slightly changing with the bacteria that's getting into the water and getting into the whales too, as the whales travel around the world, because people put their sewage into the ocean. They put all of their junk in the ocean. They trash into the ocean and everything else like that. And the ocean has a different type of a flavor to it, and oil spills and so forth, which do not contribute to a healthy sea. And so the diet of the Eskimos is changing, but let's not look at the diet today as we would look at it from yesterday. And how about the diet of the people who live in the South Sea Islands? They don't have anything but fish, basically fish, and fruits that grow around there, and they don't have too many wild animals living on their land, maybe some wild boars or things like that. But the South Sea Islanders are basically very healthy people too, because they eat basically whatever they eat. And if a whale is a mammal type of thing, and it is eaten by the Eskimos, and it's like eating meat, which it is meat. And the Polynesians, but I'm telling you, the Eskimos had very little diseases, very few diseases, very few problems that way. And when you have your Philippine and your islanders in Thailand and those areas, they too have a better diet and less diseases. Now, dropping that aside for a moment, diseases have been under control pretty much worldwide until man began to travel and claim other countries for his own. And when the Spanish went to Mexico, they're bringing to the Mexican the diseases of their national self. They killed off virtually all the Mexicans because they died, you know, of chickenpox, and they died of smallpox. They died of these diseases that they weren't prepared for, they weren't immune to. And the diseases were in Europe too, but they'd become immune to them over a period of time. So all these things were quite trying and quite trying. Now, you take your people who live in Thailand and who live in Cambodia and live in much of India and much of China and Japan, and what is their staple? What is the staple food they have? Rice. Rice. And perhaps it's brown rice because it's not been purified as it has been to send to the Western civilization. But when the brown rice was purified and the husk was taken off, so it was no longer brown rice, it was now white rice, it lacked all of its healing qualities, all of its beneficial qualities, its vitamins and minerals and all the other good things that were in the husk. That's why when you eat a pear, if you eat the skin, you eat the apple, you eat the skin, you eat the peach, you eat the skin, and so forth. Why do you do that? Because in there are all of its vitamins and minerals, and when you eat a kiwi from New Zealand, and you eat the skin on the kiwi, you're eating one of the most vitamin-rich and mineral-rich essences you could have. No, these things aren't done. No, I could go on for hours telling you about the diets of the world and how people around the world have these diets and how these diets have made them healthy and made them happy and made them live good. But if I could take you back before that time to a time when people didn't have even that, when people were all vegetarians, really. The human beings on the face of the earth basically were vegetarians because they were not, they were just seed-gathering people. They would go around and gather the foods that were available from the plants. And eating animals was not something they did very often. In fact, they did it very seldom. And the teeth are made up in the body are not designed for eating meat. They're designed for eating seeds and eating fruits and vegetables and things of that nature. Now, we're saying here, I am my ideal diet. I know my ideal diet. And I say to you, okay, let's study this. Let's study this for years and years and years. What is your ideal diet? you look at a mother, and she has a body, and in her body she creates the essence of food that's necessary for the new babies. And the essence of food that she creates is so perfectly suited to whatever is needed that nothing more needs to be added. Mother's milk is supposed to be really complete. Okay, now, we can talk about this, and we can be aware of this, and we can be intellectual on this, and we can say that's very important, it's very vital that we know about that. But much work is being done by scientists in unique areas of the world where they are studying how, so to speak, the manna from heaven. They're studying how the essence of man's real nature is not subjective food or objective food, but his real nature is the subjective food. What is his attitude about it? Now, you take the Indians in India, and they're eating rice, and they're eating white rice, because the good rice, the brown rice, gets shipped out of the country. And they're eating this white rice, and there's very little nutrient in it. And some mothers have very little rice to share with their kids, and their kids come along just fine. But they have the starvation diet rice. Others have an abundance of rice. And that's why the Indian women, if you look at an Indian woman and she's fat, then you know that her family is wealthy, because they can afford all the food they need. Otherwise, if you see a skinny Indian woman, you know that her budget is very limited, and they have not as much food as they would like to have. Now, is a fat body better than a thin body? Is a skinny body better than having too much weight and things like that? Well, who's to say? Now, what is the real food that makes us into who we are? And I'll ask you this question, and you'll answer the question before I have you answer it. But I'll ask you the question, and the question is, does your spiritual beingness need food to live?
No.
No. Why does your spiritual beingness not need food to live? Because it's not made up of corporeal substance. Now, why does your corporeal body, your physical body, your atomic body, need food to live? And if you're wise, you have no answer. You have no answer for that, because why does a bunch of atoms functioning in your body need other food outside of itself to function? You take one little atom from your fingertip, for instance, and it's enough to light the city of New York for a month or a year, what have you. But what do? We misuse our atomic body. We misuse it by covering. Now, do you know, my goodness, do you know that vitamin D is very seriously lacking in the diet today, and that they're saying some vitamin D is not real vitamin D and not beneficial, and other vitamin D is good? And then they say people around the equator are not suffering from a lack of vitamin D. They do not have any of the symptoms of the lack of vitamin D. Why? They get more sun. They have less clothes on. They run around naked, and they're soaking up the sun. And the sun is giving them all the vitamin D that they need. Now, we know that. And, of course, what I'm driving at, and you'll see what I'm driving at, is little by little, we need less and less of the outer and more of the inner. What causes the vitamin D in the body to do the job that it does? I thought about it. You say, well, no, it's the physiognomy of the body, physiognomy of the body, how the physical body functions. And no, that's not true. It's our thought. Because people can be on a ship and have scurvy, you know, from a lack of citrus juices and a lack of the vitamins in their body. And some people don't, and some people do. Now, why? Well, the physiological body has different demands. Some people think that they need it, and some people don't think they need it. Now, all I have to do is say to you, hey, there's a bug around now, and that house is infested with them. You go in that house and you're going to get that bug and you're going to have a lot of problems. You're going to have a lot of illness. You're going to have, you know. And you go in there and you get the bug and you get infested. Now, a doctor goes in there and he says, I am immune to that bug. I am immune. And he's not really immune. He's never taken any pills or anything for it. But he just tells himself, I'm immune. I'm a doctor. I don't get those things, you know. I just go in there and do my job. And he doesn't get it. And this is true. This is not a joke. This is not something that we sort of say, my gosh, they're kidding themselves. No, they're not kidding themselves. They don't get it. They don't get it. Doctors and nurses, they walk through plague-filled areas and they don't get it. Why don't they get it? Because they have a job to do. And it does not include getting sick. Now, if that is true, and it is true, if that is true, and they can walk through these disease-laden areas, plagued areas, and not be touched by it, why are we, any of us, touched by it at all? What is it that the doctors and nurses do that makes them immune to it? Their thoughts. Only their thought. All the pills in the world can't help them. You know? And doctors are the worst people in the world for taking their own advice on pills. Doctors do not take what they know they should take to benefit themselves because they know they don't need it. You know? And they don't need it. But people would say, oh, surely they would take it if they know better. You know? No. Mm-mm. They don't take it. Nurses don't either. Nurses don't even use the hygiene activities that they should, that is necessary for them to keep the hospital clean and pure. They don't wash their hands as often as they should or as completely as they should, and they don't dry themselves. They dry themselves in the same towel that they wash their hands on and they have the dirty stuff on there. And you say, well, they use paper towels. They use this. And no, they don't. And they push these carts around, and one person pushes the cart, and they pass the diseases along to the other, and they push it in one room, and they bring it out. Well, nobody in the room touched it, but the nurse touched it, and she put it on there. But why is it that it's not disturbed? Why is it that it's not something that is everybody? Well, it's not everybody, because everybody doesn't have the thought. No. You say, well, this patient never thought of having this disease that the patient in the other room had. Well, you, by the very fact that you're worried, by the very fact that you're in the hospital and you're concerned about your health, by the very fact that nurses are whispering in the hall saying, now wash your hands on that and then clean that up and put the disinfectant on that and do this and do that. And they hear these things. And when the doctors are talking, when the patient's not listening and asleep or anesthetic or whatever, they hear it clearly. They know exactly what's going on. And on the television, are you watching what your patients are watching on television? All the garbage that they're watching about hospital and other problems and things like that and the problems in the world? And this is not helping them because they're building up a mental consciousness that's destroying them. They're building up a mental diet of unhappiness and imperfection than one of happiness and perfection. So, now, what is our diet? Oh, you say, well, yes, you should eat clean foods. You should eat this, that, and the other thing. Well, now, isn't it interesting that most of the food raised in gardens is raised with manure? And the manure is taken from animals. And from humanity oftentimes, but animals, and this manure is infested with all of the problems that the animals are infested with, you know. with whatever the problems, whatever diseases they got. And then this goes into the soil to proliferate and multiply itself. And then grow up into the plants and come up in the seeds and come up in the other things. Now, I'm saying all these things not to frighten you, not to make you feel that what's the use of doing anything. I'm saying we know what the secret is. And the secret is our thought. And if we allow ourselves to be concerned about anything, we'll be concerned. I told you the woman who had six kids and they all had all sorts of diseases all at once. She was taking care of them night and day. And her neighbor says, "My gosh, your kids are all sick and you're taking care of them all. How come you don't get sick?" And what did she say? "I don't have time. I don't have time. I have a job to do. I have to take care of my kids." Now, that's not a joke. That's real. "I don't have time for it." Now, when's the last time you said, "I don't have time for dinner. I don't have time for lunch. I don't have time for breakfast"? When did you say, "Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. If you don't eat breakfast, you're not going to be strong enough to carry out the rest of the day. And if you don't eat your lunch, oh, you're just going to feel so badly, you know. And if you don't eat your supper, my goodness, you're just out of the game, you know." And all these things. And if you don't eat a well-rounded meal, properly balanced with all the things that I say you should have in there, I, the dietitian, I, the person who is telling you about yourself, if you don't do that, well, then you're in trouble. You're in big trouble. But now, why are you in big trouble? Because the thought is put into your consciousness. Now, I will ask you about this once and talk about it once, and then we're done with it. What is race consciousness? Race consciousness is the consciousness of the majority of the people about any given thing. What is race consciousness about HIV? Oh, it's terrible. Oh, it's evil. Oh, it's bad. Oh, it's something that just makes everything all mess and kills people and does this stuff and that. What gives HIV the power to do it? Our thought. Yes. Our thought. If we were to take our thought away from that and say HIV is inert, it is unable to affect anybody, any place. HIV is, there's a word for it, it is empty of any power. Follow me?
Yeah.
Now, we can say that, and we can do that, but do you? No. Do you? No. Because you allow yourself to think that what people are saying and what people are thinking is correct. That's race consciousness. What people are saying, what people are thinking, because then that begins to inculcate itself into all of the other activities of life, into all the other things of life. And when a nurse touches a patient and says, there, you're okay, just relax, be peaceful, the skin of the nurse transmits what the nurse is really thinking. Nurse is really thinking, you know, it'll be another couple of days and then we'll bury you. You know, now, isn't that nice? Now, do you think that patient doesn't know that? They may not outwardly know it, but intuitively they know that. They sense it, and what do? They prepare to die. Now, if the nurse with sincerity, believes that patient has every reason and every right and every purpose to live a long, happy, fantastic life, then she's going to say something like this: "You're fantastic. Oh, the improvement that you're making is so glorious. I see you whole and perfect. I see you wonderful. Wow, oh, I'm so happy for you. Well, what's that patient going to do? They're going to jump out of bed and say, "I'm ready to go home." You say, not yet, but you're close, you know. But the thing is, you have that privilege of going in and countermanding what the race consciousness tells that patient that is going to happen to them. You do that. And when you do that consciously, beautiful things happen. Now, if a nurse can do that, and a doctor can do that, if An anesthesiologist can do that. But what do the anesthesiologists do? I just don't want to give them too much to kill them. I don't want to give them enough to do this and to do that. And I want to make sure they're breathing properly. And I make sure that everything is all this going right. Give them a bullet to bite on and cut their arm off. We'll do whatever you need to do. And they'll live. You bandage it up. You know? But no. Why is it they die? Because the anesthesiologist says, oh, this is such a serious case, they're not going to make it, is it? Why we're wasting the anesthesia on them is a shame, you know. And they really think these things. They don't think them unkindly. They just think of them, we're wasting it, you know. Like, you are 98 years old, and you're in the hospital. And you hear that they have a new hearing aid out. And the new hearing aid would help you to hear what you haven't been able to do for a long time. You know, because of the stuff that they had has not been touching you. And so you go out, 98 years old, from the hospital, you're dying, and order this new hearing aid. Well, the new hearing aid costs $3,000. And it is good only for 2 years. And every 4 months they replace it in your ear, and it is good for 2 months. That is, it is good for 4 months. The battery lasts 4 months, and you hear perfectly. Now you put them in, and so then next day you die. Was it worth it? Was it? Yes, because for one day you could hear well. For one day, you could hear the sound of the crickets. You could hear the nurses as they're chippering around. You could hear what's going on. For one day, was that worth it? Yeah. Is one day of our life of any value? Is one moment of our life of any value? Why should we do this for somebody so old, you know, and they're going to die? Or why should we do this for a vegetable? You know what a vegetable is? I'm talking about a person. A person is a vegetable who's in the hospital and who cannot take care of themselves. They have to be bedpanned by the nurses and by whatever, and they're just laying there, and they don't even recognize their family or anything. Should we do that for them? Do we respect life?
Yes.
Does the nurse go in and say to the vegetable, we're calling this person who cannot take care of themselves, and cannot talk perhaps, or cannot even whatever. Yes. Why? Because perhaps, and we know it's not true, but perhaps the drug may be found that will release them from this situation and make them whole and perfect again. Perhaps some Jesus Christ will come along and walk into the hospital and say, are you... you know, you're the one I came for. You came for me, Jesus? No, I came to tell you to pick up your bed and walk. I told you, I came to tell you to get out of this attitude that you're whole and perfect and your family is getting sick and tired of you playing this game. Now, get up and walk. And then she gets up and walks in her family and says, but Grandma, we've already spent our inheritance that we're getting from you. And you see, this is what it is. Now, what is our diet, the ideal diet? The ideal diet is the ideal thought. Now, what is your ideal? Foods are not going to make the difference. They're not going to make the difference in your life. They're not going to make the difference in who and what you are. And they're not going to make the difference in how you're thinking about yourself. But thoughts are. And you know why thoughts are? Because thoughts are things. And thoughts actually carry out whatever you place them in consciousness for. And because thoughts are things and they carry out whatever you place your consciousness in motion for, that's what makes the world go round. 29 minutes. That's what makes the world go round. And so, you see, this is what it is. Now, what is the ideal diet? The ideal thought. No matter what food you eat, it makes no difference at all. If you think that that food's going to be fattening, it'll fatten you. If you think the blubber of the Eskimo is going to kill him, it's going to give him all these different things, because it just is, cannot be. It would happen. But the Eskimos live quite happily. And the more blubber they can eat, the better they feel. I mean, that's their thing. That's their thing. And the more carbohydrates, and the more proteins, and the more whatever, all these things people have attitudes about. And these attitudes are what destroy them. So now, our real diet is the diet of our thoughts. And in a few moments, we will talk about the diet of our thought. And we will talk about, I stimulate my thought by thinking. I love you.
I love you.